Pittsburgh, I love you. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg of Avant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zapallo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzapallo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Tonight's guest, F.J. Hartland, Pittsburgh's premier playwright, also director, actor, man about town, avid martini drinker.
Indeed.
So which of these titles do you relate to the most? What comes first on your business card?
Avid martini drinker.
Excellent.
No, actually, it says playwright first on my business card, because that's really how most people know me. So I go with playwright.
Now, your plays have been produced numerous times here in Pittsburgh and beyond. Where did you have your first play done?
Actually, I started writing plays when I was about 12 or 13. One Christmas, for some unknown reason, I asked my parents for a typewriter. I don't know why. And they came through with a typewriter for Christmas. And I just started writing. And I wrote like a daily soap opera. And I would take it to school and pass it around. And my whole class would read it every day. And they'd wait for the next installment to come in. And it wasn't performed or anything. It was just on paper, and we passed it around the room, and everybody read it and handed it the next person. And
so I'm curious, what were the subjects of this soap opera? I mean, was it torrid love affairs? I mean, there you are. How old?
Oh, like 13, 14. It was more like a parody of a soap opera. It was poking fun at soap opera. So it was all sort of tongue-in-cheek. And there were some real people that we knew that were in it, and there were a lot of fictional characters.
Did you change the names to protect the guilty?
Yes. But everyone knew who it was.
Very good. Very
but I
good.
Never had to go to, court or anything. So,
how does one then make the transition from soap opera circulation in middle school to published and produced playwright?
Well, it sort of happened by accident. I had friends that belonged to a church group, and they wanted to do a play as a fundraiser. And they knew that I wrote, and they came to me and asked me to write their production, and I did, and it was done in Johnstown, and then he took it to another church in Altoona to be done, and I was probably 15 or 16 at the time. So it was my first well-produced play, and I was asked to write the play for the junior high school for the drama club 1 year. So I had productions at a very, very young age, and then those scripts got me into the Pennsylvania Governor's School for the Arts in 1974, and I remember I turned 16 while I was there, so I was 15 when I was accepted, and 16 when I actually went to the governor's school, and it was the first year they had taken writers. They had musicians and actors and dancers, but it was the first year they took writers, so that was exciting to be in the first group of writers at the governor's school for the arts.
Very good.
And that's where I met Kevin Bacon.
Are you serious?
So if you ever play Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon...
I'm what, 1 degree?
Right. I'm 1 degree, yeah. I knew he was a student there.
Well, you would be 0 degrees, right?
I would probably be 0 degrees.
Or if you're 1 degree, then I'm 2 degree now. How does it work? The person that actually knows them is 0 degrees.
I think that's how it works.
Okay.
But a lot of people have won the game because they know me, and I knew him back in 19...
He was in your original soap opera, right? So what was he? He was at the Pennsylvania Governor's School for the Arts.
He was an actor.
I didn't even know he was from Pennsylvania.
He's from Philadelphia.
Okay, that counts. That's still Pennsylvania. We forget about that over here in Pittsburgh, either intentionally or accidentally.
He probably doesn't remember me, but I remember him.
You know, I don't know. Some of those, you know, lines, zingers he uses on interviews and things, I think I've heard you use. I think you're still very much on his mind. You're unforgettable, FJ.
Oh, I don't
unforgettable.
Know.
Well, that's a cool story.
But I really, when I went off to college, I wanted to be an actor. That was my goal. And the head of our acting program sat me down one day over coffee and said, "You know, you have to face some facts here. You're too short, you're too fat, you're too ugly, and you're too untalented to be an actor." So that's when I thought, well, I'll go back to writing because nobody cares what the writer looks like.
Well, meanwhile, you've been a member of Actors Equity since 91, I believe.
Yes.
I hope I'm not revealing anything by saying that.
But no, yes, since 91. I was, of all the people I was in school with as an undergraduate, I was the first one to get an equity card.
But you know, when somebody says something like that to you, I mean, what does that do? Does it destroy you? Does it fuel you? A little bit of both?
Well, I was 19, and it really destroyed me. I was really crushed because I thought, you know, this was going to be my career path, and it really. But in hindsight, it was a great thing because that's what got me writing, and I switched majors. And my advisor in the English department was the one that encouraged me to go to graduate school. And so that's really sort of how it got started. So at the time, it seemed like a crushing thing, but in hindsight, it was a good thing.
And as the guy that writes the play, in a sense, you get to play all the parts.
That's right. I play all those people somewhere along the way.
So do you feel that your experience as an actor contributes to your success as a playwright?
I think it's a big factor because I think my strength is I write roles that actors want to play,
mm-hmm.
because I know what actors look for in a role. So I got so tired. I mean, I was always the fourth spear carrier from the left, and I try hard that every part, even if it's a supporting part, is a good role for an actor to play. So that always fuels me when I think about characters that I want.
So in your plays, the spear carriers are unusually chatty. Right?
Yeah, they are.
That's one of the hallmarks of an F.J. Heartland play. Fantastic. In fact, there's a great idea for a play. Just spear carriers. That's the title.
That's the title.
And it's a cast of spear carriers.
And what they do while waiting.
Yeah, let's write this together. We can write it right now, you know? Or, you know, maybe that's their legitimate job. They're, you know, connected with the... Oh, was that the doorbell? They're connected with the, you know, spear factory or something like that. I don't know. But now you may use that royalty-free from Brian
Thank
Edward.
You.
I don't mind.
I'll be starting that tonight.
Right away, I'm sure. Yes, yes, indeed. Now, does it work the other way around? Do you feel that your experience as a playwright enhances your performances as an actor?
It's really a whole different way of looking at a script. So when I do perform, I try not to look at it as a playwright, and I have to look at it from a different perspective. So I sort of disengage myself as a writer when I want to play a role, because now if I'm directing, I look at it as a playwright. But as an actor, I think you have to come at it from a completely different perspective. So I sort of disengage the writer part of me when I'm acting and look at it from... As a playwright, you look over everything as the big picture, the way the director does. But as an actor, you're looking at it from a limited perspective. So I think it changes for me as an actor.
Now, if we had sitting here the complete works of F.J. Heartland... how would you describe that body of work?
Well, I can tell you what Ted Hoover once said about my work.
I am dying to hear it.
He once said that watching an F.J. Heartland play is like eating a delicious piece of lemon meringue pie and accidentally biting into a piece of tin foil.
Was this a compliment?
I took it as a compliment because I do sort of write plays that when they begin, it is kind of delicious and easy to digest, but then something always happens that is unexpected or is a jolt to when you're watching the play. And that's because that's how I think life is. Days are going by and everything is fine and the phone rings and everything changes with a phone call. So it's like biting into tinfoil sometimes.
In fact, when that volume of plays is published, I would like to recommend that the cover is tinfoil. What do you think about that?
Ted will probably make me pay a royalty for that.
You might get a bill in the mail just for using that quote.
I probably will, yeah. You'll probably be getting a phone call once this airs from Ted.
Now, what do you like to see when you go to the theater?
I like to be entertained. I like to be told a story. I think there's nothing more fascinating than be told a good story. And it doesn't always have to be a happy story. It can be a sad story or a touching story, but I like to be told a good story. And I think there's something intrinsic in human beings that we love a good story. You know, even ancient man would sit around the fire and tell each other good stories because that is just so captivating. There's something so charming about being told a good story. And so that's what I strive to do when I write, and that's what I like to see when I go to see a play. I want to be told a good story.
Now, with the characters that you have invented, of all of them, is there any one or a few in particular that you feel especially close to, more so than others?
Well, I wrote two plays. One was about my mother, called Postcards from a Dead Dog, and one was about my father, called Shaving Lessons and Half Windsor Knots. And the play about my father is much more autobiographical than the play about my mother. The play about my father is probably, I tell people, 94% autobiographical. The one about my mother is probably 75%. But those two plays are very close to me.
One does want to embellish a bit here and there. You know.
But I think that those two plays are especially close to me because they are about my parents. And there's universal things about children and their parents, and people really seem to relate to those two plays a great deal because we share a common experience, everyone, with a father or a mother. Mm-hmm. And so people really seem to relate to those two plays.
So in those two plays, is there a character that is, in a sense, you?
Well, both plays have a narrator who is sort of me, but not completely me. And I always make a joke, every time the play's been done, they cast really handsome guys to play me. And it's always so nice to get to be handsome for a couple of hours.
I think that was in the program notes, the script notes, you know, the leading narrator must be
attractive.
Oh, yeah. And it was specific. I mean, there were a couple even photographs, I think, of actors that you had suggested.
Should look like this. Right. So, but those two plays in particular. But this last play that I wrote, the one that was in the New Works Festival, called The Perhaps, was really such a... I don't know what it was about the play. I really felt connected to the play. And I mean, I like all my work, obviously, but that one play, I don't know if it was because I was coming off a long dry spell, I hadn't written for a while, that it seemed so dear to me, or I just loved the idea, and the idea just sort of came to me in a moment. I was sitting in front of the television. I was watching the Golden Globes. I always have a pad and a pen with me wherever I'm sitting in the house. And I just started to write, and it just sort of, you know, came to me, and it almost wrote itself. And it was really made the play very special to me.
And, you know, I do want to discuss that play because I did see it. But describe it briefly. For those that did not.
It's about a little boy who is abandoned by his mother, and he's sent to live with his grandmother, whom he does not know. He's never met her. And the grandmother never leaves her chair. All she does all day is watch the old movie classics channel on TV. And eventually the little boy finds an imaginary friend, and his imaginary friend is Betty Davis. And I used only real quotes from Betty Davis and real lines from her movies. All her lines are, you know, so it was a week of research to find.
Only a week?
Only a week. Thank goodness for, you know, the computer. And, but then built a play around that story and those lines. And And I had never written children's roles before, so it was sort of interesting to have a child as my lead character. And it was a hard decision. A lot of people try to talk me out of it.
Out of writing?
Having the lead be a child. They wanted it to be a grown-up like it was in Postcards and Shaving Lessons. And I just was really adamant about, there was something to me so charming about this lonely little boy that is befriended by Bette Davis in his mind.
I'm jealous. I mean, Bette Davis is by far my favorite actress of all time. Now the tricky thing is, I'm also partial to Joan Crawford. And, you know, there was that terrible feud.
Terrible rift, yes, which comes up in the play.
Mm.
And I, you know, I don't know why I picked Bette Davis. I always admired Bette Davis. And I'd seen a lot of her movies, but there was something about her strength that I was really drawn to, especially when this little boy is so lonely and feels so adrift that he latches on to someone that always personified to me strength.
Mm-hmm. She was tough, and I think was the first one to sue the studios over contracts, you know. And she was unsuccessful, but it paved the way for Olivia de Havilland to do it, who won. And that, in some ways, I believe, was the beginning of the end of the studio system altogether.
It really was, because no one had challenged the studio before then, and Bette was the first.
And she was president of the...
Academy of Art, Motion, Picture Arts and Sciences, and first female to do that.
And Hollywood Canteen, she ran for a while too, which was exceptional. She's somebody that I would love to have dinner with, you know.
When I was growing up, I used to say there were three people I wanted to meet. One was Bette Davis, one was Katharine Hepburn, and one was Jacqueline Kennedy. And now they're all gone, so I've got to pick three new people to have.
Well, listen, this is why I bought my tickets to see Cher the day they were released. Okay, she's coming in April to the console. I'm going to be there because I didn't want that to be the case, you know, because God bless her, she's still out there, but who knows for how long. But, you know, I regret Eartha Kitt. Yeah. I missed seeing Eartha Kitt by a week when I was traveling, you know, throughout the Cape, and I was like, darn, you know, I would have loved to have seen her. And then, you know, she's no longer with us, but the memory lives on. You know? So, you know, I mean, does Bette Davis inspire you? Is there a particular actor or even a writer that really fuels your fire?
When I first started writing, I stumbled upon the plays of George Coffman and Moss Hart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really, and I read Moss Hart's autobiography, Act One. I think I was in ninth grade at the time, and that really inspired me. I mean, it was really, and I loved their work, and that really sort of got me started. And then later, as I progressed, I was always a fan of Lanford Wilson plays, because I just thought he wrote such beautiful characters, people that really touched you, you know. So those would be the big influences, I would say.
Hmm.
But, these really have been the biggest, I think. But Kaufman and Hart were just such a, you know, I've read everything about them when I was young. I was just so interested. And George Kaufman was from Pittsburgh, so.
Well, where do you start when you have a great idea that becomes a script and you want to get it done? How do you do that? I mean, what's, you know, is there one tried and true textbook way? I'm kind of, that's almost rhetorical. I know the answer's probably no. But it seems like, okay, well, you know, in order to get a play produced, you need to have had work done in order to have, you know, but how do you do that? You got to jump on somewhere. So what, how do you do it? Or what advice do you have that happen?
When I sit down to write, because I'm so obsessed with story, I mean, to me, it's about telling the story. I always write what I want to see first on stage. And then I go and I write what I want to see, the last thing I want people to see on stage. And then my first draft is just seeing if I can get from point A to point B. And usually that first draft is just trying to get there. I don't, you know, go, and then I go back later in a rewrite and fill in.
Mm.
But the first time through is just trying to see if I can get from that first picture to that last picture. Now, what was strange on this last play, that perhaps I did it, I wrote the first moment, I wrote the last moment. And then I got a great idea for the next to last moment. And then the next to the last moment. And I actually wrote it backwards. I wrote it from the end back to the beginning, which I have never done in 40 years of writing plays, wrote the play backwards.
You did a Ginger Rogers, backwards and in heels.
In heels, yeah. Very much so. And, you know, and usually, I mean, I've done it where I start at the beginning and sometimes I'll skip ahead, but I've never done that. I have worked backwards. So that was unusual. And I really wrote it to submit to the New Works Festival. I try every year to write a play that I submit to the New Works Festival. And that's been a really good exposure for me. And I got to meet a lot of people who, you know, work in theater and got my work out there and seen and met a lot of actors and directors and producers. But then I just sort of randomly submit. I look for, you know, contests or festivals that are happening online all the time. And I just keep sending things out and usually they come back, but
but plenty of them have been done. So it's you kind of just got to throw the seeds out and see what grows.
You do, just
you
sort
know?
Of see what happens, and it's amazing how you meet one person or you have a production somewhere and that leads to something else, or they know somebody that you didn't know they knew, and it just sort of it's odd how the journey happens.
And Samuel French has published two of
my plays.
Your plays. Now, how does that happen?
That,
do you just
kind of
say,
really...
hey, I've got a great story for you. It's yours if you want to put it in that little yellow.
They were really kind of flukes. I'd had, when I finished Carnegie Mellon, I had a lot of friends who were directors that went to New York. And one in particular took some of my plays and he got in at a little theater and they produced some of my work. And then Samuel French has an off-Broadway short play festival every year, and any theater in the New York area that does original work is allowed to submit these plays. And then the plays got done at the theater and then got nominated to go into the festival and then finally worked their way to the final round. And there were 4 years I made it to the final round and 2 years that I actually won, and the prize was to be published. So in 82 and 85, but I think I had a show in maybe 84 that didn't win. And then more recently, I've had shows that were nominated and were in, but did not make it to the last, through the last cut. So that's how I got the two French
Pretty cool.
plays. But then Postcards was done in New York, and a company called United Stages publishes this Best Of series, and they asked if they could publish Postcards in that. And then more recently, I've been working with originalworks.com, which is an online company out of Los Angeles. And you just send them scripts and they say yes or no. And so they've said yes 3 times. They've said no more times than that, but
it's all right.
It's the 3 yeses that count.
Yeah. So when, you know, if you have that reaction, of course, you know, in your eyes, when you say something's done, I mean, you feel that it's, you know, it's done. But if that reaction, you know, if it gets a no or more than one no, do you ever go back and tweak things and then resubmit? Or are you kind of just like, you know what? There's nothing wrong with it.
It depends. If it's a show that's been produced a lot, then I feel pretty confident that it's, and it's just, it's not their cup of tea. It's not what they're looking for, because every publishing company is different. There are certain things they specialize in that they're looking for. And if you're not it, it doesn't matter how brilliant your script is. If it's not what they're looking for, it's not what they're looking for.
Yeah, so you
for.
Can't get discouraged about it. It's kind of like actors going to auditions. It's just, hey, another opportunity.
Exactly.
Find the next one.
I was commissioned to write a play for Duquesne called Shuffle Ball, Change and Die, which is sort of a, it's about a series of unfortunate events at a dance school. And it was very successful at Duquesne, and I sent it to this Original Works, and they said they're very interested in it, and they're waiting to see me get another production of it before they really commit. So I've been trying to get another production of that and get some press so that maybe they'll say, you know, yes. But at least they said they were very interested in it, and they just didn't feel it was ready yet. So,
you know, a lot of all the places that your plays have been produced, would you say that the majority of them have been Pittsburgh?
Overwhelmingly, I think it's been Pittsburgh. But I've sent things out, and I've had shows, you know, Miami, I've had shows in D.C., I've had shows in New York, you know, Columbus, Wheeling, some things out on the West Coast.
So is there a Pittsburgh tone or a Pittsburgh voice, do you feel? And if that's something that you've tapped into, you know, do you feel that that's maybe why you're so popular here?
I really don't think there is a particular, I think if it's a good play, if people are moved by it or entertained by it, it's that's a universal sort of thing. I think it's just because I'm here and I have more connections here, and you know, this is where I've lived and, you know, wanted to come back to from the time I first lived here in the early 80s. So I think that's just more to do with it than...
Do any of your plays actually take place in Pittsburgh?
Yes, I've written a couple plays that took place in Pittsburgh. And in fact, the last show I had done in New York, I'd set in New York, and the New Yorkers kept telling me it was obvious I wasn't from New York because of things the characters did or said. So from that point on, I decided I was setting all my plays in Pittsburgh because I know Pittsburgh.
Maybe we're more polite here. I don't know.
Yeah, it was funny. They were just very, oh, people in New York would never.
This is really lacking vulgarity. You're clearly not from New York City.
Well, it was a scene where a woman came upstairs and she said, I can't stay. I asked the taxi to wait. Well, apparently in New York, New Yorkers don't ever ask a taxi.
Unless it was maybe like, you know, the 1940s and they were like super rich. Yeah.
Well, I said this woman wasn't from New York. She was visiting from Seattle. She didn't know any better. But they were like, oh, people in New York would never. So.
Well, this lady would.
She would. So I just decided from that point on that everything's going to be said in Pittsburgh.
Where taxis will wait all day.
That's right. I know how people in Pittsburgh behave, so.
We are a unique little town, you know. I think the people here are wonderful. It's a big little city.
I mean, I came here in 1980 to go to grad school, and I fell in love with Pittsburgh. And I left in 83 or 84, and all I ever wanted to do was come back. I mean, and I finally did. So, because I love it here, and it's amazing. I mean, the amount of theater in Pittsburgh is overwhelming. Oh, yeah. When I look back to what it was in the early 80s to what it is now, there's a new theater company every week.
Anymore. Yeah, and you keep supplying them with good work, I tell you. So what's next? You got anything on the burner? Anything?
I like to say I'm on hiatus, but I just have been so busy working that I really haven't had the time to write. But I have some projects I do want to get started in, places that I want to submit plays to, so I need to buckle down here soon before the end of the year.
Yeah, geez, come on. But we should mention, too, that you will be a contributor for Berg Vivant. We're very excited about that.
I'm very excited about it.
So you'll be out seeing shows and performances and sitting down and letting us know what you think. And I'm really looking forward to your unique perspective on that. I think it'll be very entertaining.
I'm excited about it. Very excited.
I have to invest in some more vodka for these martinis. Yes. But you know what? Small price to pay for excellence, if I do say so myself.
Thank you.
Oh, great. Thanks for chatting today.
It has been my pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. Have another cocktail, Judy.
All right. Twist my heart.
In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Berg Vivant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvivant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.